Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It's great to be back with you today. It is July 22nd, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning.
Glad to have you with me. And also with me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Happy Monday.
Is it? I haven't checked.
Yeah, no, it's
okay.
Fine.
Excellent. All right.
Speaking to you from the future, I can tell you it's fine.
That's good to know. I'm glad. I'm glad to have a vague notion of what my day has in store. Charlotte, I wanted to start with you talking about a piece you wrote this morning about, this morning to me, about micro LED screens.
Yes, well, there's two elements to this. So the first one I think is quite interesting is that Apple is apparently talking to LG and Samsung about getting micro LEDs, about getting OLED 120 hertz ProMotion displays for the iPhone.
Okay.
Now, there are 120 hertz displays already on the iPad Pro. But not on the iPhone yet. There are other smartphones out there on the market that do have such a display.
Okay.
So that's the first thing. I suspect there'll be lots of iPhone users who will be very happy to get a nicer display.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a second element to this, which is while the iPhone is apparently moving to OLED, there are rumors that the Apple Watch is moving from OLED to micro LED.
Okay.
I have technical explanations for both of those.
See, look, do you see what this is? Great. Should we just sit back? I've got a cup of tea here, obviously.
Yeah, I'm good.
So we're going to put our feet up, put our mics on mute, and, you know.
Yes, John, to it, really. Take us to display school.
So here's how it goes. OLED is known for faster response time than liquid crystals. When liquid crystals' response time become too fast, they don't become opaque enough. And so there is a limit on how fast you can make a liquid crystal respond and have desirable optical characteristics. OLED is inherently fast response,
okay.
maybe 10 times better than liquid crystals in its ability to change states.
Now, you keep saying liquid crystal. Do you mean like an LCD screen?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to make sure we're keeping up.
That's what's in, for example, the iPhone XR.
Okay.
Whereas the iPhone XS and XS Max have OLED displays.
Mm-hmm.
So OLEDs have been typically very expensive in the past, and now that they're in mass production and the prices are coming down, it's time to take advantage of the inherent speed ability of OLED. And so that's why we're going to see ProMotion OLEDs, 120 hertz.
Okay.
As for moving the watch from OLED to micro-LED, micro-LED is, instead of one liquid crystal per pixel, it's many micro-crystals per pixel. It has the advantage of being more brightness per energy used. And so that would be very favorable in a watch where battery power is limited,
mm-hmm.
and the watch is often looked at in daytime. But micro-LED is pretty immature technology, and so it's probably much more expensive per square centimeter than OLED. And so a perfect place to put micro LED is in the watch, where you can keep the cost under control and take advantage of the bright output but low energy consumption.
Okay. So that's the advantage. So that's the advantage to micro LED, is that you sort of get more brightness for less juice.
Right.
Okay. So given all the different kinds of situations that somebody might want to look at a watch, it might be nice to have it be a little bit brighter, like outside, like you're saying, or
yeah,
be able to better control that.
Apple's doing its own micro LED fabrication, which we've known about. And Charlotte reminded me before the show that there was a podcast we did on Apple's micro LED research. It was a news article, about 6 months ago, Charlotte?
Yeah, I think there was stuff that came. Well, no, I think it was longer than that. I think it was 2018, because it was actually Jeff Gamert reported on it as mm-hmm. I was having a read through of the stuff we'd done. So, John is right in saying that Apple has its own manufacturing capability for micro LEDs, which
okay.
I guess long term will reduce the costs for Apple and short term makes them higher. Is that a fair comment?
Is it always cheaper to do stuff in-house? Yeah, I would say typically that's true.
Generally for Apple, yeah.
Integrated is better. And Apple doesn't have to build a really, 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 really large plant like for the iPhone, because Apple Watch sales are a fraction of the phone sales. And so to build micro LEDs for the watch is no brainer, but to do it for the phones, if it ever comes, would require a factory that's 10 or 100 times bigger, I would guess.
Yeah.
I think there's another interesting element. First of all, John's explanation was fascinating, but also, as I said, there are other phones out there already that have 120 hertz displays.
Mm-hmm.
It's you can do
120 hertz on LCD. I mean, there's no need to do that now.
But also, I believe, yeah. But the point is, it's interesting that the iPhone's only at 60 hertz, as I understand it. Now, that's very Apple, isn't it, to kind of, I don't want to say behind the curve, but it's kind of followed other companies in doing this. It hasn't been the first one to put in 120 hertz displays, whether it's LCD or OLED. Do you know what I mean? It's interesting that Apple is again in this position of letting other people kind of test the waters with technology and then bringing it in themselves.
Well, in my opinion, and this is just an opinion based on what I've read, Apple's very fussy about the quality of the display. They're very, very exact about the
Apple's optical, fussy about components,
about
surely
the
not.
Quality of the optics. And the manufacturing standards that they impose on their suppliers are so stringent that there's precious little room for adventure, whereas other manufacturers who have perhaps less stringent standards can play fast and loose and introduce new technologies faster, hoping that the customer won't really notice the difference in the display quality. Because after all, you're spending a lot less, and so they can always say, well, you know, you didn't pay $1,000 for your phone, so what do you expect?
That's valid. I mean,
I think I used up my Charlotte is irritated about how much Apple products that she wants costs rant a while, last week, so.
Well, let's talk for a second about promotion displays, because Apple already has 120 hertz promotion displays. They're just in the new iPads.
Correct. They're in the iPad Pro.
The iPad Pro. That's right. The new iPad Pros. The latest iteration of the iPad Pros are 120 hertz promotion displays. So this isn't unheard of technology.
If you're compiling a list of Apple products that Charlotte would like you to buy for her, please feel free to add the iPad Pro to that list.
Which
they're
size?
Also very pretty and I'm not fussy. They're both very pretty and shiny.
I should interject something here. The broadcast standard and the video standard for H.264 and H.265 is 60 frames per second.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You're not getting 120 frames per second. You're getting 60 frames per second, and then the software is taking advantage of the ability of the display to change state fast and interpolate frames. So you get two frames for every 60th of a second because of software finagling and through the ability of the crystals to change faster. So you're getting a sort of interpolated 120 hertz, but you're not getting a broadcast transmission of 120. That's not here yet.
Okay.
Just for clarity.
Okay. Now, those are related things, but they're not the same thing. The hertz and the frames per second. So I want to make sure we're clear on that.
They're the inverse of each other.
Okay. So, part of what I wanted to do was just sort of make clear, like, it's not that promotion at 120, at 120 hertz is unheard of to Apple. They're already making stuff at scale. Mm-hmm. With this technology in it, because those are like some of the larger screens that Apple makes, iPad screens,
displays, and they've decided that that it's for a pro device. They've decided at the moment this is top end, and I guess they would argue it costs them more to produce such displays. Therefore, it needs to be part of a more expensive device.
Probably,
I would guess.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, that does go some of the way to explaining, you know, the difference between an iPad and an iPad Pro, for example, is like that refresh rate, that sort of thing. So that's, but it's an interesting idea to hear some of the shift in this. I know at least a couple of things that I heard when Apple started including any sort of promotion displays in their lineup. A lot of people talked about, like, you may not see it now, but the shift to ProMotion is as significant as the shift from when you could see the pixels to a Retina display. So,
right. And that kind of makes sense also why it put it in a Pro device first. Mm-hmm. You know, Apple kind of aimed the iPad Pro at people who may be doing design on the go, you know, architects and those kind of people, or... Mm-hmm. You know, people who needed really intricate drawings, really intricate videos to watch whilst on the go. Yeah. So it makes sense that the higher quality display in the way you're describing would be in such a device.
Mm-hmm. And I think
when are we going to get OLED iPads? That'd be cool.
That would be cool. I wonder how the display being OLED would interact with all the other stuff that goes into the display. Like the interactivity with the Apple Pencil and being able to respond to that in a really fast, in a rapid enough way that it's a useful tool to use, that kind of thing. Like,
I don't know of any limitations. I think it's just cost.
Yeah.
I think a 12-inch OLED display is just so much more expensive than a 12-inch LCD display that Apple's not ready to do that.
That makes sense.
The cost comes down for OLEDs.
Yeah. But it also, I think it would be interesting. One thing that I saw pointed out when it looked like... which ultimately did happen when it looked like the iPhone was going to go OLED, was people talking about a little bit of battery savings. Because with an OLED screen, the black pixels aren't lit up at all. And so there's no, like, on my screen, on an iPhone 8, the iPhone screen is always lit up. Like, even the black pixels have a little bit of light going to them. And with an OLED screen...
power to turn a pixel black in LCD.
Right. Right. And yeah. And with OLED, that's not the case. They just don't turn on and that's fine.
That's because the LCD is backlit and you have to apply power to the grid to polarize the pixel at that location so that the light's blocked. And to the extent that you can do that or not do that, you get contrast ratios that are either good or bad. And as I said before earlier, if you make the response time really good, then it's harder to black them out. So there's a trade-off between the two.
Mm-hmm.
So you want black levels and you want fast response time, and liquid crystals are fighting you at every turn on that. But the technology's gotten a lot better. Yeah.
So as we find out more about micro LED and what sort of display technology Apple looks like they're going to use, we will definitely keep you updated here. John, thank you for taking us to display school.
You're very welcome.
I would like to talk for a second to all of you about today's sponsor, who is OmniFocus. Specifically, OmniFocus from the Omni Group is an app you've probably heard of if you listen to other podcasts, because it's an app a lot of people use. It's a professional level to-do list manager that helps you get more done every day. You give everything to OmniFocus. OmniFocus takes care of it for you. You can plan better because you can see everything all at the same time. And OmniFocus always has a list ready for you of what you need to be doing next, which helps you make sure that you don't miss any deadlines. OmniFocus for iOS is a universal app for iPhone and iPad. And the features include basic things like actions and grouping actions into projects, flags for different things. You can set due dates and reminders. You can add notes to all of those. And tags add a second layer of organization to that. So you can see everything tagged to a person or a location or an energy level or what type of activity it is. You know, all the phone calls you have to make, all of that kind of stuff is available. Forecast helps you plan the next few days. You can go through, do your weekly review if you're a GTDer. You can get all your weekly review stuff taken care of. And it does include an app for the Apple Watch, so you can have those notifications all the way through to your arm. There's Siri support and shortcut support. The Pro version includes even more customization. You can always view your data the way you want to when you have the Pro version to create those custom perspectives. And you can sync the Mac version with the iOS version. And there is now OmniFocus for the web. So while you work PC people, you can still keep all your tasks in OmniFocus and take a peek at all of them. And to learn more and try it out, you can always go to omnifocus.com and find out more. We'd like to thank OmniFocus for sponsoring the show today. John, you mentioned an article this morning about Google, oddly enough, and the Pixel 3a.
Yeah, the first thing I read this morning was a really good article by Michael Simon at Macworld. And the title is Apple is poised to lose lots of iPhone users if it keeps ignoring the middle. And in a fashion that I have not seen so well laid out before, although it may have been, Mr. Simon lays out the case that Apple customers are being greatly annoyed by the high cost of their phones. They're stretching out their refresh cycles. There was a survey he cites by a company called Bank Mycel of 38,000. And that's a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
To get a plus or minus 5%, you only have to sample about 1,500 or 1,800 people from a random sample of the population. But these are probably not a random sample, so they had to do a higher number. But 38,000 people is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it suggested that iPhone owners are about 15% less loyal to their handset. And the suggestion that they're going to be, you know, moving to less expensive phones in the future. Now, and he goes on to talk about what he thinks Google's doing with the Pixel 3a, which is a pretty good phone. It's got pretty much state-of-the-art smartphone technologies, great camera, Android OS, of course, but everything that you'd want in a smartphone for about $399.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes on to talk about the iPhone SE, the legendary and much-loved iPhone SE that Apple was rumored to be resurrecting and then never did.
Mm-hmm.
He points out that when the iPhone SE was rolled out, Tim Cook had glowing words about it and mentioned that it was much wanted by many users.
Yes.
Yeah, but then for some reason, Apple lost interest in the iPhone SE. Maybe there was a lot of ruckus and people didn't actually follow through on their promise to purchase, or maybe sales were just disappointing. For some reason, Apple decided that a small, cheap phone was not a moneymaker anymore. I believe I've seen analysis that says that it pulls the average selling price, the ASP, down.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple doesn't want to do that. They want the average selling price of their iPhones to go up because that pleases investors.
Sure.
But a hole has been opened here, according to author Simon. And when Apple leaves a product line hole, other competitors are going to drive a truck through it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's predicting that that's what's going to happen if Apple doesn't figure out how to sell a less expensive mid-range phone. Now, he mentions the iPhone XR is less expensive, but only less expensive in comparison to the XS.
Mm-hmm.
It's not less expensive than a lot of other smartphones. And so he lays out the case that Apple needs to fill this gap somehow, some way, keep their average selling price up, or they're going to end up losing sales
right
to people who are defecting. And so it's a good article.
Yeah. Excellent. Bravo. So here's
this is
the thing.
Me giving a standing ovation.
Well, it belongs to Mr. Simon.
Yes.
Yes.
The thing about this that I'm confused by is the abandonment of the SE. So for people who don't know, if you haven't been listening to me on podcasts for that long and you did not hear me on podcasts when the SE came out, I was upset because it came out in like February or March. And the previous September, I was eligible for an upgrade. So I got a 6S. I didn't want a 6S. It was too big. I was excited about Apple Pay, but I didn't want any of the other stuff. I didn't need a bigger phone. I really didn't. I loved my 5S so, so much. But I was due. It was time. There had been enough iteration that I felt like I needed an upgrade. It had been 2 years and everything. So I was angry about it because if I had known that the SE was on the horizon, like credibly, I would have waited and bought an SE instead of the 6S that I had purchased. So I was super, like, I was excited it existed, but I was sort of mad about it because it was 6S insides with a 5S case. And I was like, this is perfection. This is the only phone I want. Fits in my pocket. Easy to operate with one hand. One Kelly size hand. It was great. I thought it was fantastic. And then like they just sort of left it out there. Like it never got updated. It never got larger storage capacity. It never got anything. It was nothing. And then we started hearing SE2 and people got excited about it. And then nothing. And then two or three waves of them in the last year or so popped up in the refurb store. And the second that thing went live in the refurb store, there was a stampede and everybody bought them. Which is the thing which is why I don't understand. Like, clearly there is demand for a phone with a screen size you cannot measure in acres. And when you're not referring to your screen size as acreage, perhaps that's a thing that people might be interested in. And that will always be amusing to me after I remember the original iPhone coming out and people going, who would carry around a phone that big? So the part of this that I don't know, and the part that I wish that at some point we would get to find out, is what happened to that iterative model, the SE2 or whatever we wanted to call it. I think that would be interesting. And I absolutely agree.
You brought up a really good point. Your mentality there, I think, is the mentality of a lot of customers. When an iPhone is priced reasonably, the mentality is, I want the latest and the greatest.
Yeah.
When the iPhone is priced exorbitantly, the mentality is, I'll upgrade when I need to.
Yeah.
Right. I have personal experience with this. I went into my cell phone provider's store here in the UK not that long ago because I'm coming to the end of my contract, wanted to know what the options are.
Uh-huh.
So just as a reference, I think that I could get an iPhone model, the top end models, for about £55 a month. Mm-hmm. For, I think, an 18-month contract. Not so bad. Kind of expensive, though. There are non-Apple phones you can get for considerably cheaper.
Yes.
You can probably spend half of that if you want, if you don't want an iPhone. So I think, look, it kind of goes back to my rant the other day about the iPod Touch. Apple is starting to make a decision, has decisions to make here. That it is starting to, well, sorry, Apple is actually giving consumers a decision to make. We all know that probably the best smartphone on the market is the top-end iPhone. Mm-hmm. We all know that the best computer on the market for most use cases, you probably want some kind of Mac. But the problem is competitors are offering similar quality products. They're maybe not as pretty. They maybe don't have some of the little features that the Apple products do that we all like. But they are considerably cheaper and people are prepared to stomach having slightly less for and having more cash in their pocket. And you can understand that.
I think Apple's depending on the notion that you get better security. You have the secure enclave. Nobody's broken into iOS.
I don't think most people think of that when they make their purchase.
Nope.
I think
most people know. There are people who do, but I don't think it's.
There are
I don't think
some
it's most
people that do. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But I think.
And I.
Go ahead, Charlotte.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, so I think people do think about privacy. I do think that people think that they can do a lot of things much better on an Apple device, whether it's an iPhone, some kind of Mac computer, an iPad. We know that the best, we know the best tablet on the market really is the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to cost you more than a non-Apple tablet.
Sure.
And you're probably going to be able to do most things most users want to do,
mm-hmm,
on the non-Apple product and still have more money. And I think Apple is going to this is a real big test for Apple, that it has got itself so far ahead in the products, but it now needs to make it so that people can actually buy, most people can buy them. And I know we're going to get lots of comments to the show saying that I'm stupid, that I'm wrong, and that I'm totally misunderstanding how Apple operates. And I think that's fine. But Apple has got to this point because, yes, it sells the best products. But it's no point in having the best products if nobody can afford to buy them.
Right.
The situation has changed and Apple has to change with it.
Yes.
Bingo.
That's exactly it. And I think the bigger threat to Apple's sales numbers is not necessarily the Pixel, because that requires another purchase. It's, I'm not going to get a phone this year. Like, it's my turn, but I'm not necessarily, like, this year, like, I've had my phone for 2 years, so it's time to start looking at, like, is the phone that comes out this year the one that I'm going to get? And maybe it is, but maybe it's not. like, maybe I'm just gonna wait. And like, things have evolved enough. There's not a spectacular new feature in the new one, and everything is just iterative over the 10, over the current like 10 models. You know, it's still Face ID. The cameras are a little better. Maybe the screen's a little nicer, like we talked about before. I'm gonna wait another year and see if Apple can entice me in 2020 instead.
There's no 5G iPhone in 2019, and we have to wait till 2020.
Right.
So 2020 is the bingo year.
Not a very good point.
Right. So I don't know. Like, I understand that price is a huge factor, but I also know that, you know, now that we've reached the point where the price of a phone is a four-digit number, I think people are just going to hold on to them longer. Yeah. Like, I haven't gotten my $1,000 out of this yet. I haven't gotten my $1,200 out of this yet. So I need another year before I feel like that value proposition is being made to me again. And I think that this is happening about the same time that the platform is mature enough, the apps are mature enough, the technology behind all of these things is mature enough, the number of things that you can do with your little pocket communicator is a great number. And, you know, aside from making calls, you can send text messages, you can communicate with other people in video chat, you can do all of the things that apps can do, you can buy stuff, you can look up anything on the web. All of those things are all things that you can do regardless of what other things Apple wraps around that core functionality. And that's why something like the SE
is the battery.
Simon brought that up in his article. The phones are doing, he said exactly that phones are doing everything we need them to do right now.
Yeah.
I have a XS Max and I am going to sit on it. I've had a new phone every year since the five phones came out.
Mm-hmm.
I have started with the original iPhone in July 2007. I walked into the Apple store and paid $500 or $600.
It was $600 at the time,
I had a new, well, we got a rebate, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've had a new phone every year, but this XS Max is glorious. Mm-hmm. And it's an OLED display. And it does everything I need to do. And I'm going to be hard-pressed to decide I need a new 2019 phone.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing that Apple needs to really worry about is that Apple customers just aren't turning that stuff over like they were. And I think that's going to be, like, in conjunction with a company that runs a different operating system makes a phone that's half the price or less than half the price is going to be a compelling offering to some people, but I think to other people it's going to just be nothing. Like, I'm just going to sit on the one that I have for another year and wait and see if Apple can entice me again in 2020 or 2021 or whatever. You know, I know a number of people who just get a new phone when something happens to the old one, or someone like me comes along and goes, you know, there's a new operating system coming and your phone won't run that, you should get a new one, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I think there's more to it, but I definitely think that this Pixel 3a thing is a thing to consider. And I'm excited about it because I always love when Apple is forced to compete. And I hope that they feel forced to compete on this budget smartphone price device, because I really want to know what Apple comes up with that. Maybe there really will be an SE2 at long last. That would be great. I think we're going to leave it there for now. I definitely want to find out from you what you think about the size of phones and the size of phone price tags. You can email us at observations@macobserver.com. You can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. Charlotte, thanks so much for coming by today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And John, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me too.
I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.